All right, who's ready to have a meeting?
Let's have one.
Hello, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Mike, and I am an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story.
Everybody, I'm Gene. I'm an alcoholic. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our own personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, "Yes, I'm one of them too, and I must have this thing." And now it's time to introduce tonight's speaker. It's an honor and a privilege to introduce Danny tonight. Danny has been a mentor, a sponsor, in many ways like a dad. I have a father. He's shown me those things of how to live in this design for living. Hold me to account, and I admire him greatly. I still want today what he has. If it wasn't for tonight's speaker, I can tell you for sure I wouldn't be here. So, with a great privilege and honor, please make welcome Danny H.
I'm Danny Heath. I'm alcoholic.
Amen.
My sobriety date is 3405. My home group's 12 Step Titans. I've got a sponsor. He's here tonight. He's got a sponsor. And I've got sponsors. And when I came into this program, I wanted a way out of drinking and drugging. I was running away from life instead of running towards or getting engaged in life. But I needed a lot more than just to stop drinking. I needed some fellowship. I needed a new outlet for my energies. I needed a new power to live life by. And it had to be outside of myself. My way didn't work anymore. Before I tell you how I found that new way of life here, let me back up and tell you what got me here. I first came to the program in 1984. I came to Atlanta in 1980, like a lot of people, running from the law. I was running from the FBI, the DEA, and the local vice in Kansas City. Statute of limitations has run out, so I can admit to it. I was a truck thief, a dope dealer, and just a whore. And all around nice guy. I got here in 80, and I think I was 25, and my dad hit me out. 2 weeks later, the FBI searched the house and I was hiding in a moving box. And I bring this up, not only did he hide me from the law, he was the one that made the ticket at the airport possible to get me out of town in 45 minutes, but then literally, I mean on my heels, I went out the back door as they came in the front door. I was tipped off. And he helped me. He gave me a second chance, you know. I came from a good family. They worked hard. They tried to teach me right from wrong. And, you know, a lot of those lessons have come back to me from my childhood. But I bring him up because 4 years later I almost killed him, beating him to death. And I came out of the blackout with him in a pool of blood and a policeman at the door, and my brother's trying to push me out the door. I first went into treatment at that time, Peachford, and it didn't last long because my money ran out. And anyhow, for 6 years I stuck around the program, another fellowship. I said I stuck around. I didn't get sober. I didn't know anything about being sober. And when I say sober, it's a way of life. It's a living by spiritual principles, practicing these principles in your life, knowing what they are, having taken all of the steps, having worked the steps, you learn the principles. And I had a great sponsor. I go to him with problems, and he keeps saying, "Who are you working with? Who are you sponsoring?" I wasn't sponsoring anybody. It was all about me. I went back out in 90. I made a decision at that time based on fear. And it cost me dearly. I proceeded to waste another 15 years of my life. I had started my own company, and I was very successful. Within about a year and a half, I'd gone through close to $400,000. I quit work and I walked away from the gate and told 14 men we're not working anymore. And a year and a half later, I was homeless. I stayed on the streets for a few years. And I bring this up because this is an important, I'm just going to touch on this. It's going to seem long-winded, but it's important to me. I've been given so many signs in my life that there is a God. The fact that I'm aware of His presence is the most important fact of my life. It's what keeps me from getting afraid today. It's what keeps giving me hope. It's what allows me to go out there and not worry about the old material things and just try to do the right thing every day. And I'll get into what I think the right thing is later on. But after I got through that money, I got to know some of the other hillbillies on the street. And there's a guy named William that wanted to hear my story. And I proceeded to tell him my story. I'm a little long-winded, so it took me about a day and a half. But we were fueled by crack and Budweiser. And so it seemed to go pretty fast. At the end of all this, he told me, he said, "Don't ask me why I know or how I know, but you're going to get three signs from God that He loves you and that He'll always be there for you. And don't ask me when it's going to happen. I don't know, but I just know." And the weird thing, and I believed him, because this was a guy who used to hand me a Bible. I'd be bobbing around the streets and be wanting a beer, and I'd drop in, you know, "Hey, I just happened to be in the neighborhood." And, you know, he'd give me a beer, and he'd say, "Danny, go in there and get the Bible off my dresser and open it to such and such. Just start reading any page." And I wouldn't get two lines out, and he'd finish it. He'd pick up. He knew the Bible word for word. He'd been in a coma for about a year and a half. A young lady used to read the Bible to him every day. About 6 months later, I came into a little change, and my grandmother had passed, left me $9,000. Took me a couple of weeks to talk my mother out of it and give it to me. Convinced her I needed a truck. It lasted about 2 weeks. We shot up at Mr. Albert's out in front of the crack house. But I got that money, and I got a large amount of an alcoholic substance. And nobody knew where I was at. I was in this house. And I'd taken such a large amount at one point that fog started rolling down the walls, coming in on the ceiling, it was coming in on the floor, it was encasing me, and I got this overwhelming fear of paranoia that I was going to die. The devil was coming to get me. and phone rang. Remember, nobody knew where I was at. Nobody knew the phone number over there. Nobody had ever been to this house. And I was there by myself with all the lights off, and it was at night, and I only had a candle on the coffee table. And it was like somebody hit a dimmer switch, and you could hear the electricity humming through all the wires, and the dimmer had just barely came on a chandelier in the ceiling. And that's when I seen all the fog, and the humming was getting louder, the lights were getting louder. The phone rings, and I pick it up. And I said, hello. And he said, Danny. And I said, brother, that was William, the guy who told me to go see Three Signs. And I said, you're not going to believe what's going on. What's happening? And he goes, oh, no, that's why I'm calling, man. And he goes, remember, I told you, you're going to see Three Signs about 6 months ago. And I said, yeah. And he goes, don't ask me how I know, but you're about to see the first one. And at that moment, the humming was getting louder, the light was getting brighter, the fog had closed in, and I started hearing this ka-clop, 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 like a horse walking towards me. And I looked to the right, and there was nothing but a wall of fog, and at that time, his hoof came through the wall of fog. And he's coming to get me. And it just was like a split second. I didn't consciously do it, but I do remember saying, God, please help me. And when I came to, I was on the floor, curled up in fetal position, and the phone was over to the side of me. And all I could hear was bro saying, Danny. The lights were all out again. The fog was gone. The humming was gone. I picked up the phone. I said, bro, you're not going to believe what just happened. And he says, no, I do believe. You just seen your first sign. Click. And you would think that that would straighten me up a little bit, sober me up. Oh, man, I went right back to it. I ran into him the next day, and I started bringing up, he said, don't even talk to me about it. He knew exactly what I was going to talk to him about. And maybe 6 months after that happened, I was still on the streets. And by this time, things were getting bad because I'd lost the last truck. I went through, I don't know, 7 or 8 trucks. I had a landscape business, and they all kept getting pawned or shot up. I'd been shot at, I don't know how many times, 5 shots in the cab once, never hit, 8 shots from the 9mm through the windshield another time, never hit. And I say this because, I mean, there must be a reason I'm up here today. I lived through all this. But 6 months later, I had gotten something on the front. Couldn't pay the guy, and I kept dodging, and finally caught up with me, and wind up, I got hit with a cinder block, and it was about 4 hours later, I fell out in front of the doodock, and bleeding internally, and going in and out of consciousness, and I was over off of Hollywood, and over at Bankhead in Hollywood, you know, I like to say there's nothing Hollywood about that area, but I went down to Grady, and I regained consciousness, and the guy said, I've located where the bleed's coming from. It's your spleen. I'm going to take your spleen out. You've got about 2 minutes to live, sign this paper. I said, no, I want to die. I said, I want a priest. I'm ready to ask God for forgiveness and admit my sins, and I'm just a complete failure. I'm ready to die. And he said, you don't understand. I can save your life. I've got just a couple of minutes. I've got to open you up. Well, at that time, I thought it was a nurse, squeezed my hand and said, don't give up. You can start over. God will forgive you. And when she said, you can start over and that God would forgive you, something clicked. And I said, well, if you'll notify my mother that I'm here in the hospital, and let her know that if I die, I'm sorry for all the trouble I've put her through. My dad had been dead, by the way, for years. The guy who saved me from the law. And I came to, I'd gotten out of intensive care. I'd been in there about 4 days. And they put me in a room, and I regained consciousness. And my mother and my brother were trying to go to the bed, and they said, "Look at him, he looks like a skeleton." I weighed about 140 pounds. And that was the second sign. I found out that there was no nurse in the operating room that whispered in my ear. My mother got a call from somebody, and she couldn't track this lady down. And they said nobody called her. But I made this, what I thought was a nurse, promise that she would come find my mother. And let her know I'm in the hospital. The third sign, I got off the streets after that. I was split from here to here when they did the operation. I couldn't walk for about a month. I got off the streets, but I didn't stop. And I went back to work. I was trying to work. And I have the 7 DUIs and whatnot. In fact, 3 or 2 in a week and a half. I moved into this hotel room temporarily. 7 years later, I realized I was still in that hotel room. And I've been trying to quit for a long time. I came out of a blackout. And by the way, I've been hired and fired so many times in the same day. I venture to say 30 or 40. And I've been with this company for, been there 21 years. I was there for 10 years. And I came to one morning and I realized I'd overslept. And I screamed out, "God, please help me. Tell me what to do." And I literally heard his voice say, "Call Mark Bird. You can't do this by yourself." I literally heard a voice. That was the third sign. It was like the light bulb went off. I remembered from the first time that this was a WE program. And it made sense. You know, I've been trying to quit on my own for so long. And so I called him. And he came and got me. And I'm 49 years of age. I went into a halfway house. And best move I ever made. Three signs of God. Well, you would think that I was fully aware of his presence, but I didn't have it down just quite yet. You know, I'd been running from life, and you know the old saying that clean house, trust God, and work with others. That's basically the program. Well, I had to come in here, get a relationship with God, learn to trust Him, and clean house and work with others. But it's kind of hard to do when you've got doubt and fear all the time and resentment. You meet up with resentment. So I took everybody's suggestions. I got a sponsor, and thank God for him. He didn't pull any punches. He was a guy I could relate with, and he said, "You know, I'm going to go through this one time with you. I'm going to take you through the book, and after that you're going to need to work with others because you're a great forgetter. All alcoholics are great forgetters. And the only way you're going to remember or relearn everything that I teach you is by working with others." And I took it to heart. He told me that I was the friggin' problem. That it wasn't all about me anymore. And, you know, I got a relationship with him. I learned to have a relationship with my other fellow sponsees in my family. One of them is my sponsor today. I like to tell the story. Terry's my sponsor. And when we first met, we were out on the golf course. And I said, "Hey, where do you live?" He said, "Oh, I ain't telling you, man." He said, "I know your path." He said, "You check back with me in about a year." And I thought, "You smart ass mother." You know, and it wasn't long, a month or two later. You know, it wasn't even that long. I was trying to get back into golf, and I was getting frustrated, and like everything else I've been doing up to that point and prior to coming into AA. I'd never finished it, or I quit. And so one day, I don't know, I maybe played 9, 10 holes. You know, we were playing 18. And I backed it. I was about on my fifth shot on a par 3 or something. And I said, I'm not going to play no more. Terry said, oh, yeah, you're going to quit? And I said, yeah, I'm done for the day. He says, well, if you quit at this, what else are you going to quit at? Oh, I ate my lunch. Made me mad as hell, but he was right. You know, he, like my first sponsor and so many others, they told me what I needed to hear. They didn't pull any punches. And that's not easy to do. I've been trying to practice that, and a lot of times I feel bad saying that, but I've gotten over it. It's still hard sometimes, but I know it's best for them to tell sponsees what they need to hear instead of what they want to hear. You know, I had to get honest with myself. My way wasn't working anymore. I had to get rid of all my resentments, which I had a ton of them. And my sponsor let me make all of my amends, with the exception of one, to my son and my ex-wife. He said you weren't ready for it. And it took probably 3/4 of a year before he let me do it. I had to come to realize that she was spiritually sick. The things that I felt like I was a victim or that were done to me weren't intentional. It was simply because she was spiritually sick. And who am I to judge? I've been spiritually sick and done a lot of rotten things to others. So, you know, what makes me any different? You know, what makes me so special that I can't have stuff done to me? So, anyhow, I'm, you know, I made those amends and my life was getting better. It was getting better before I made the amends. But life kept getting progressively better when I followed suggestions. And, you know, my sponsor was a stickler for learning the principles behind the steps and for us to talk about them and discuss them every day for weeks at a time before we go on to the next step. Give them examples of practicing these spiritual principles. I'll never forget when I first went into that halfway house, you know, I kept thinking about drinking and using every day when I got off that bus. I didn't have a license for a long time. And the suggestion was made, why don't you just ask God to remove the thought? And I thought it was too corny, it wouldn't work. There's an 18-year-old guy telling, you know, me, a 50-year-old man, what to do. And four or five other guys came out of the living room at that time, and they said, no, man, it works. Try it. We've all tried it. It really works. And I mentioned it to my sponsor, and he said, that's right. He says, it does work. He said, try it. So the next day I did, and it worked. It took a long time. I looked like an idiot walking down the street going, God, please remove the thought, over and over. And I felt like I was back out on the streets talking to myself, but by the time I got back to the apartment, the thought was gone. Same thing happened again the next day, and before I got across the street, the thought was gone. Same thing happened the third day, and before I got off the bus, the thought was gone. Fourth day, thought came to mind. Before I got out of the seat, the thought was gone. See, every night when I got off that bus, I'd see people with a six-pack of beer and all these attractive senoritas, and my mind went to the races. And so it started to work. Just all I had to do was ask for help. And it started my track record of having some hope and developing that faith that really does work, that God really is there. And all I have to do is ask Him for help. But, you know, all these things were made possible through others. God put people in my life to show me, to give me examples, to set examples, to say certain things to me. David used to promote me looking for signs every day. We used to talk about it. And I give him signs that there is a God in my life. And they're there every day if you just look for them. But (clears throat) I'm a commissioned salesman, and I don't sell anything. I ask every day people for money I don't even know. I don't know if I'm going to make any money from one day to the next. And why do I tell you that? Try it sometimes. See if you don't get afraid. I'm not selling anything. Warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart. Oh, you help these kids. But I appeal for sponsorship for major universities to help defray printing their collegiate publications. They get an ad in the book. You know, half of it's career guides, the other half are research journals, the other half are yearbooks. It doesn't make sense to do it from a business standpoint, but yet they still do it. Why? Because it's people's nature to help other people. It's my nature to help each and every one of you. It's inside of each and every one of us. And I start to raise my voice when I say this, but I want you to stop and think about it. The next time you're in trouble, the next time you're worried, the next time you're scared, just ask somebody for help. Swallow your pride. Humble yourself. I had to humble myself. We all have when we came in the door. You know, our way didn't work anymore. But this way does. And it all starts with that first word, we. You can't do it by yourself. I couldn't. I don't think any of you will think that, admit or say that you can. If you do, you're lying to yourself. You know, I had to get over lying to myself. I lied to myself before I lied to any of you guys. And I lived a life of lies all the time. Today, I try to stay in today. I try to be honest with myself. It's the first principle. But I have to have hope each and every day. And I have that because of that track record of hope and that faith and trust that I found that I can rely on God to provide what I need. Not what I want all the time, because I don't know what's best for me. And you hear this happy horse shit all the time. But the fact is that you get what you need if you stop and think about it. I know I do. I don't want to get preachy up here, but I can't help it. I get in that Ernest Ansley mode, and I want to be healed with everybody. I didn't have any integrity. You know, people, you know, a man of good character does what he says he's going to do. Yeah, I was a character all right, but I didn't have any good character. I had to start doing esteemable things if I wanted some self-esteem. And my sponsor showed me how to do that. My sponsor today still shows me how to do that. He does a lot of service work. You know, when I run with him, I see how he's polite to others, how he's polite to his wife. He's considerate of others. He jokes. He jokes more than anybody I know, but he's very sincere in a lot of ways. But I bring this up again because I'm constantly given examples. People put in my life, this is a we program, I'm constantly given examples on how to act, what to do. You know, I stayed in Harry's house for 3 years after I got out of that halfway house, and I was told, don't get in a hurry. I had a fear of women. My sponsor said, you can date. He says, I'm not telling you not to have a relationship, but you need to have a relationship with me first, or with God first, then with me and your fellow sponsee brothers, and then you might know how to have a relationship with a woman. I didn't know anything about having a relationship with a woman. But I learned through having a relationship with my sponsor and with my friends. And I've had it. Two pretty good relationships since I've been sober in 11 years. That may not sound like a lot, but I enjoyed each and every one of them. They were both in a hurry to get married, but you know, that's why we're not together anymore. I mean, after 3 months, I want to go through a couple of seasons with you before I get married. But you know, you don't know what you want, Danny. I'm moving on. 3 months, your time's up. I'm so smart, you know, I'm hard-headed. I tried it twice with the same one. And it was like 90 days to the day, a second time again. You don't know what you want to see. While we're on that subject, here's another mistake I made. I love to tell on myself. We don't ever want to be the arbiter or whatever, you know, judge anybody else's sex life. We just have to ask ourselves one simple question. It is selfish. I may not be quoting it just right, but you get my drift. I say this because Johnny remembers me back in the 80s. Oh man, I was the guy that thought, you know, that destination or that new car, I had to have the Porsche, remember? Yeah. Oh yeah. Fly trap, they called it. And, I had all the bells and whistles, walked around with $5,000 in my pocket and no brains in my head. And, let me just say this. I finally learned, and Terry was the one that allowed me to do it here this last time. She just wants to have sex. Well, she doesn't want a relationship. I know I don't want a relationship with her, but you think it'd be okay? I don't know. What do you think, Danny? Been around long enough. What do you think? And I said, well, I don't know. We're being honest with each other. Okay, well, if you think you can have it, go right ahead. But you give me a call, let me know how it works out for you. I should have known when he said, you give me a call, let me know how it works out for you. He didn't approve. And it was about 3 or 4 weeks later, after that, every Saturday afternoon get-together, she said, why don't you take me out? How come you haven't introduced me to your mother? How come you haven't ever chucked me to any of your friends? I said, well, wait a minute. It sounds like you want a relationship. And she said, well, yeah, I've changed my mind. I do. I said, well, I don't. And I realized right then and there when I said that hurt. And it hurt me to say it. And I had been inconsiderate again of a woman. And I realized for the last time, I couldn't lie to myself anymore. There is no such thing. Me included, every one of us, when we talk like that, what we really want is a relationship. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's only natural. It's only natural that we want a partner, somebody to share life with. So I don't kid myself anymore about being able to just have sex. That's for me. More power to y'all if you can do it. But every time I've tried, somebody's been hurt. And usually it's both of us. Okay, enough about that. I had to get that out. I took to heart what my sponsor said about working with others. I took to heart so many things he said, but I started raising my hand. I started, putting myself out there as a sponsor. And it's the biggest gift I've ever received, is being able to work with others. I've learned more from working with others than I have learned anywhere else or any other time. When I came in here, I had no purpose. I was lost. My only motive was to get laid and get high and get drunk so that I could forget all the pain, all the shame. But after I came in here slowly, day by day, just by staying in today, each and every day, before I knew it, a month had gone by, and I'll never forget, I thought I was just going to check into that halfway house for a couple of months, get my shit together, and move on. And Mark said, no, I'd like for you to stay here 6 months. I think it'd be good for you. So I took his advice. Hell, he knew better than I did. I was 50 years old, but I didn't know squat. I had to remember. I had to be honest with myself. So I followed everybody's suggestions, but once I started working with other people and started being considerate of others, I started to regain some self-esteem. I started to feel good about myself again. I had a good relationship with my family. I don't know, I'm rambling, but it's what keeps me remembering each and every day why I'm here. I'm here to help others. That's why I've been kept alive all these times. That's why the bullets missed me. That's why, you know, the devil didn't take me out of the fog. That's why I didn't die on the operating table. That's why I didn't die in that motel room. That's why I wasn't locked up in prison. I mean, I'm here to help other people. And, you know, when I learned that, when I realized it wasn't about me anymore, I started being the happiest guy in the room. I mean, my life is wonderful today. I'm in a relationship with another woman, and her name's Mom. 2 years ago, I moved my mother in with me. She's 85. And I like to joke about that, but it makes me feel so good. So good. I get choked up, you know. I get to help her. She helped me for so many years, both my parents. She prayed for me for 15 years. And now it's my turn. I get to do something for her. And there is no greater gift than to be able to help someone else, to serve somebody else. You know? There's no greater gift. You know, the Porsches, the girls, the destinations. It don't mean shit. What really makes me happy is to be able to be a good example, to be of service, to help somebody. It gives me a sense of worth. You know, before, nobody wanted my opinion on anything. There was a time when they did, and there was a time when everybody looked to me for help, and of course when I went off the deep end, that's what made me feel bad for so long. But I, you know, like all of us, we come in here, we do the work, and there comes a time when we have to forgive ourselves. I still occasionally have to remember that. And when Terry and I were talking today about picking the qualities out of the hat, I was reminded of about 6 months ago, back before Lent, I went to confession. And Father said, you know, lighten up. You're being a little too hard on yourself. You need to forgive yourself for some things, and I think you're doing a good job. And I just need somebody. I didn't go in there to hear that, but I needed to hear that, obviously. And, you know, none of us can do anything about yesterday, but we can do something about today. And as long as you stay in today, you'll do a good job. Don't worry about tomorrow. Stop forgetting yesterday. I had to. We all do. That's the way you get on. I'm going to read you something out of my... I keep looking at this because this is something that Noble's got me going back to. I was taught so many good habits by my first sponsor. I've had this book for a little over 11 years, and I read the big book a lot. I take others through the book, but this is the book I'm in more than any other. It's 24 hours a day. My sponsor taught me first thing every day before I talk to anybody, before I turn on the TV or answer the phone, to take time out to read the meditation, because it's going to remind me I'm an alcoholic and that I need God's help, and that this is a wee program and I can't do it by myself. And after I read this thing 3 or 4 times, then I pray. and then I listen. And I don't always give instructions. A lot of times I do. God puts thoughts in my mind as to who I can call that day or what I can do whenever I've got worries. But more than anything, it makes me aware of His presence today. And it's the most important factor in my life. I've got to remind myself every morning. I've got to start my day out every day reminding myself that He is there. But Noel reminded me of this here a while back. I had a decision. The guy, for the umpteenth time, was wanting me to go to work for him. And I had some doubts and fears. But anyhow, he reminded me of this, and I turned him on to this a few years ago, and he still reads this every day a lot, and I've gotten back into reading it, but it's May 12th. Turn out all thoughts of doubt and fear and resentment. Never tolerate them if you can help it. Bar the windows and doors of your mind against them as you would bar your home against the thief who would steal in to take away your treasures. What greater treasure can you have than faith and courage and love? Think about that. See, all these are stolen from you by doubt and fear and resentment. You have to face each day with peace and hope. These are the results of true faith in God. Faith gives you a feeling of protection and safety that you can get in no other way. See, it was always easy for me as long as I was in that halfway house or in the meeting. But when I got out of the meeting or when I got off of work, I seen them girls on the corner and them 12 packs in their hand. Every day I have fear. Every single day. But it doesn't last long. It goes away right away. Because I've trained myself to remember God's got my back. He's going to give me everything I need. Everything. I used to think I could never be happy if I wasn't in a relationship with another woman. I've been in a relationship with another woman all my life. We all are. We're all in a relationship with each other. What are you doing about it? Are you setting a good example? Are you being there for them? Do you really have to have a relationship with a woman? I know I don't. I just have to have a relationship with my fellow man. It gives me everything that I need. It gives me a sense of worth and purpose. God's made every bit of it possible, and I thank God for it. And I thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Danny. That was just what I needed to hear. Awesome. And I have asked Tinsley to come up and pass out the chips.
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Danny. That was great. Here at this meeting, we have a chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you'd like to try this way of life one day at a time, we offer a white chip. Would anybody like to pick up a white chip? After 30 days, we have a silver chip. Anybody else got 30 days? 3 months. Red chip. Yellow chip for 6 months. Green chip for 9 months. Anybody got 1 year or multiples of years? Anybody want to reconsider on a white chip? Big hand for the chips you hold.
Okay, we'd like to thank everyone for joining us at the Blue Chip Speaker Meeting tonight. Last night I truly
new rope. Came to it somewhere strange to me. As I rode from town to town, can't put the bottle down. Right now feels like it's killing me. Life out here gets so depressing. Need something to take the edge, you see.